Good evening, everyone. This is John W. Vanderkirk speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you the news of the world. U.S. troops, now in possession of the whole of the southern shore of Lingayen Gulf on Luzon, have already captured a nearby airstrip. The average advance inland measures 4 miles. Enemy resistance thus far has been weak. The Navy reports the loss from a violent Pacific storm and not from enemy action of 3 destroyers. In Europe, von Rundstedt's armies are now believed to be planning a complete and orderly withdrawal from the Bulge. The enemy salient has been narrowed in the center to 9 miles. The rather obscure Nazi offensive in Alsace has at one point moved closer to Strasbourg and increased the danger to that city. British-trained native paratroopers have been dropped in Norway and have cut one of the main Norwegian railway lines. The Russians control 3/4 of Budapest. And now, a word from Charles Lyon.
There's nothing pleasant about a headache, the kind that sometimes annoys you along about this time of day. So if you have a headache, try this for prompt relief. Drop an Alka-Seltzer tablet or two into a glass of water like this. Now, listen to it fizz. Then, drink it. Because Alka-Seltzer is dissolved when you take it, its pain-relieving analgesic, sodium acetylsalicylate, is ready to go right to work. And because it is guarded by valuable alkaline buffers, this analgesic loses little or no effectiveness. No wonder, then, that so many millions of people rely upon Alka-Seltzer for relief from occasional headaches. See about that supply of Alka-Seltzer now. And remember, when the tablets get down to 4, that's the time to buy some more. Now back to John W. Vandercook.
Unfortunately, one cannot believe what the Japs say. If one could, the best news in the Pacific today would be the promise of the former Japanese commander-in-chief of the Philippines that the Japanese Navy now will go into action. The same enemy warlord admits that immediate countermeasures are essential. The United States Navy would like nothing better. The Japanese Grand Fleet was badly injured in the Second Battle of the Philippine Sea. It was not, as some enthusiasts indicated at the time, destroyed. If from desperation, the Japs now decide to summon all of their still effective warships from Singapore, from the protected inland seas of the Dutch East Indies, and from the waters of Japan itself, and send them into action against Luzon, it is an almost mathematical certainty the war will be shortened beyond all present expectations. Admiral Nimitz now has more floating power and more planes at the far side of the world's widest ocean than were on hand to win the Philippine Sea victory. The Japs have far less. At latest reports, the anticipated Japanese counterattack against our landing forces on Luzon has not yet materialized. Nearly 15 miles of the sloping beach and immediate swampy hinterland of Lingayen Gulf is now in our grip. There, under the roasting tropic sun, on a much smaller scale, is being repeated the extraordinary pageant of power which impressed itself everlastingly on the minds of all who went ashore on the famous Allied beachhead in Normandy. The great gray ships with steam up and every gun alerted move slowly in the far background across the mouth of Lingayen Gulf. Sleek destroyers dart like nervous watchdogs to and fro over the glistening azure surface of the sea. Farther in are the anchored transports and supply ships. Between them and the curving beach, there is a restless, ever-moving swarm of the innumerable landing craft that are the creations of this war. Everything seems confusion. Everything, in fact, is perfect order. The infantry and the light tanks, watchfully, quickly, are pushing inland. The sand shore is lacerated with the pattern of war vehicles of every sort. Well above tide mark, in dry fields already trampled hard by soldiers' boots, the triangular hummocks of heavy ammunition and the long rectangular rows of green cartridge boxes are piling up. Observers and ordinary citizens have been somewhat bewildered by General MacArthur's statement that the Japanese apparently were taken completely by surprise. Possibly it was the casual remark of an enthusiast at one of the most dramatic moments of his life. Lingayen Gulf was in all ways the most logical site for an invasion operation. Any doubts the Japs may have had must have been dissipated by 3 days of direct naval shelling, rocket attack, and aerial bombardment. The fact is, a fact more impressive than mere surprise, that the American technique for a landing assault has now been perfected to such a point it's utterly impossible to prevent such a landing anywhere. And the Japs know it. Scarcely a single man, much less a concentrated defense force, can survive the terrific localized destruction which precedes the going ashore of the infantry. Whatever they may have expected, the Japs on Luzon had no choice except to withdraw from the Lingayen coast and farther inland, out of the range of naval guns, get ready for the counterattack with which they will try and fail to drive us back into the sea. And now to NBC in London.
This is John McVane in London. Front dispatches reaching London tonight are speaking of a general German withdrawal from the tip of the Salient. German trucks and other vehicles are reported streaming back into Germany. American troops have captured Samray and tonight are fighting in La Roche. They swung around the town and struck back into it. One report says the tip of the Salient seems empty, which may mean the Germans were able to get out the bulk of their men and material from that sector. Senator Vandenberg's suggestion today that the Allies sign an immediate pact to use military force if necessary to prevent German and Japanese mobilization after the war is already receiving close attention in European capitals. The Senator's idea that Congress should waive congressional approval of the use of American forces for such a purpose is looked upon with special interest. Obviously, no official comment will be made here on a subject that is strictly an American affair. But Senator Vandenberg's plan would do much to relieve Allied uncertainty about the part America will play in the post-war world. Fear and distrust of Germany, and to a lesser degree Japan, are the dominating factors in all European thought on post-war affairs. That fear largely explains security attempts already made by Russia, Britain, and France. At the moment, no Allied nation feels it can count on American participation in any general scheme for control of Germany. If the United States does enter upon such a pact, it'll do much to strengthen Allied confidence in America's intentions after the war. But if after the war the whole thing has to go before Congress, before America can act, the measure will lose most of its strength. I've talked with a lot of Britishers and Frenchmen and a few Russians. They say, what is America going to do about Germany after the war? They say they understand that America so far has given no specific undertakings about post-war settlement. But they always wind up by saying, well, until America can do that, get down to brass tacks, we've got to do what we can by ourselves.
Now, from gray and icy Europe to the hot tropic islands of the far Pacific, we bring you a direct report from the Philippines. I'm very sorry, I've just been informed that we are unable to make contact with our News of the World representative somewhere off Luzon. Until the United States is compelled to fight a truly total war, and for the first time fully exert its still unmeasured strength, we Americans will continue to be bewildered by the question that I imagine must flit through every one of our minds almost every day. Where do all the Germans come from? A carefully drawn up estimate of the present strength of the Wehrmacht has just been issued. After 5 years and 4 months of war, it is believed the Nazis still have 6 million men in the German army. One begins to understand why the going is still difficult. The intelligence reports that have been carefully gathered and examined indicate that 4.5 million German men are in combat units. About 500,000 rather less fit enemy soldiers are assigned to garrison duty and to the task of guarding communication lines. The final million, who represent the real dregs from the bottom of the bucket, are the very young, the distinctly elderly, and those with marked physical disabilities. That final million is, most of it, still undergoing a course of training. One can be sure the Prussian field marshals secretly hope they will never have to be sent into the line. When we've been engaged as fiercely as we've been lately along the Western Front, we naturally drift into imagining that we are confronted by most of the strength of the German Wehrmacht. Unless unknown shifts and changes have been made quite recently, that's not true. The fact is, all our troubles have come, it's reckoned, from rather less than one-third of Hitler's forces. About 70 enemy divisions face us in Holland, Belgium, and France. About 170 German divisions are still committed to battle or to strained, expectant waiting, facing the Russians in the east. At least 300,000 German troops are stubbornly holding back the advance of the polyglot Allied armies in northern Italy. And now for a direct report on national affairs, I switch you to NBC in Washington.
This is Morgan Beatty in our nation's capital. Now that the headlines have told you we're committed to major battles on both sides of the world, the military authorities are springing the news that's hard to take. The news that they're doubling the draft quotas for the first 6 months of 1945. They're taking 150,000 men a month instead of the 60,000 they had indicated late last year. They are urging a national service law on Congress for civilians. But if Congress will not enact national service, they'll settle for a work or fight law, a law requiring most men between 18 and 45 to get essential jobs if they haven't got them now. Industry will need 700,000 additional men between now and July the 1st, over and above the 900,000 men needed by the Army and the Navy.
On the international front today, the Senate began one of the historic debates of the century, the 1945 debate on American foreign policy. Senator Vandenberg led off, as John McVane has indicated, for the Republican minority. Speaking from a pulpit-like stand on his desk very carefully, he urged that the Congress give the president the power now for peremptory use of force to keep Germany and Japan disarmed. His speech seemed to say that Republicans would back the principle of international cooperation to enforce peace, provided it's done under the Atlantic Charter and all political decisions now made by force will be reconsidered in the post-war world. Republican Senator Wiley of Wisconsin, newly appointed to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, endorsed the same idea. On the Democratic side of the aisle, Senator Tom Connally undertook to reply, but without any of the Connally color, without the Connally arm-waving and phrase-making. The senator from Texas, the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, complimented Senator Vandenberg for an acute suggestion, as he called it, and he hoped when the test came that the senator from Michigan would be voting for and advocating the adoption of an international organization in behalf of peace. It was a fencing match from start to finish. The Democrats clearly hoped to avoid a showdown on foreign policy until the president has met Churchill and Stalin. And up on the House today, Representative Sabbath of Illinois charged the Washington cocktail rooms are crowded with army officers in swivel chairs. The congressman thought that it was a damnable outrage, and he believed a lot of these officers could be replaced by girls and messenger boys. He wants, as he put it, a thorough house cleaning. And here's the rest of the news. Another coal shortage threatens the nation. War mobilizer James F. Burns asks all householders and business establishments to hold their temperatures to 68 degrees. And the Navy announces the loss of three destroyers in a Pacific typhoon, the Hull, the Monahan, and the Spence. And the Army confirms that a giant C-97 transport has broken all transcontinental records. The flying skyscraper went to from Seattle to Washington in 6 hours and a little over. And the Republican minority in Congress proposes a constitutional amendment to prohibit anybody from serving more than two terms as president. That would seem to be locking the library after the history's been made, but that's what happened in Washington today.
John W. Vandercook will return with some more late news. Friends, here's a fact well worth remembering. Vitamins are an important and necessary part of your food, just as necessary as proteins, carbohydrates, and other food elements. And because vitamins, among other things, can help you keep up your normal resistance to colds and help you maintain the energy, nerves, and digestion you should have, bolstering up the food you eat with additional vitamins may very well prove to be a benefit to you. Now I wonder, have you tried one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules? Since it is so difficult to be sure your food gives you enough vitamins, why not make sure? Do it by taking just a single one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsule every day. That's all, just one capsule every day. You can do it economically, for a 60-capsule package costs only $2, and that's enough to last you for 60 days, actually about a dollar a month. Tell your druggist you want one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules. Developed by the makers of Alka-Seltzer. Potency guaranteed or your money back. Now back to the NBC newsroom.
The new Greek premier in Athens for the first time gives solid grounds for hope of an end of the Greek tragedy. He promises early elections, declares there will be no general punishment of Elas guerrillas, and guarantees a complete non-political reorganization of the Greek armed forces. Best of all is the assurance that all collaborators will be punished. And that's the news of the world. This is John W. Vandercook speaking for Alka-Seltzer. Until tomorrow at this same time, goodbye from the newsroom in New York.
Friends, here is just a reminder. Whenever a touch of acid indigestion is troubling you, for prompt relief, be wise. Alkalize with Alka-Seltzer. Listen to John W. Vandercook and the Alka-Seltzer News of the World program again tomorrow evening at this same time. This is Charles Lyon. This is the National Broadcasting Company.